Welcome to the Alliance Blog Podcast, a presentation of Alliance-Wrestling.com, your number one source for news and information for the National Wrestling Alliance. My name is Jay Cal, and if you have been a longtime listener to this podcast, first and foremost, thank you. Your patronage is appreciated. But you know, every now and then, change is a good thing. And I'll be honest with you, I kind of feel like the density of listening to a 2.5 hour podcast might be a bit much. I know some of you guys plug us in your ears while you're at work, and that's awesome. I do appreciate you guys enjoying this podcast and listening to us each and every week. However, I think this show is more adequately listened to in smaller chunks. I think no more than 45 minutes at a given time, I think would be more ideal for you, the listener. I mean, I gotta be honest, I won't listen to any podcast that's 45 minutes long. You know, for some of you guys out there who are listening right now, I mean, God bless you for going through 2.5 hours, but sometimes even I get sick of my own self. So we're giving you an option here. Options for the Alliance Blog Podcast. We are going to post more content more frequently in smaller doses. It's more consumable. It'll fit in your mouth better. Whoa. Put that in the file. Anyways, I hope you enjoy this week's interview with Jarrell Clark. We're also going to be talking all things NWA as we march on to the 75th anniversary show. Of course, there will be Alliance Guys festivities. I said Alliance Guys, but really the Alliance blog. There'll be the other Alliance Guys there. Dave Scooby, Tim, NWA, or excuse me, the Alliance Gold. It's been NWA Gold in a while. They'll both be in St. Louis along with me. And if you are a part of this Alliance family, hashtag we are the Alliance, make sure you slide into my DMs on almost any social media. We're going to bring you a shirt. Mention this podcast and you'll get a high five as well. But without any further ado, let's talk to Mr. Jarrell Clark. Hey guys, check this out. I am officially now sponsored by Dubby. Dubby is a clean energy drink made to give you focus with no crash. If you guys are like me, you're always needing a burst of energy, especially with one with no crash. Dubby contains vitamins, amino acids, a nootropic, and 150 milligrams of caffeine. It keeps me awake with no jitters, guys. Check it out. Merch link is in the bio. Dubby. Former NWA World Junior Heavyweight Champion, and that is only just a fraction of the accolades that this man has. But, you know, being an NWA podcast, we're going to focus on that. My guest today is Mr. 630, Jarrell Clark. Jarrell, how are you today, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good, man. Very happy to be speaking with you because in the early days of my NWA fandom, a lot of our viewers now are, they just kind of found the NWA when Billy Corgan purchased it, or might have been familiar with the NWA, under the previous ownership. But, your version of the NWA is, a much different time in space. We're talking about the early 2000s, about 2005, I think it was like the height, the pinnacle, or maybe it was 2004, excuse me, was the height and pinnacle of your time in the NWA. And, I just kind of want to get your feelings about what the NWA meant to you back then, like, as an up and coming pro wrestler. What did those three letters mean to you?
Well, in the beginning, when I actually started, I literally didn't really care where I wrestled. My entire goal when I started wrestling was just to get in front of a crowd one time. That was literally it. I didn't go through the traditional training that everyone did and such. I was trained on a high school wrestling mat. by a gentleman named Jeremy McCullough up in Baltimore, Maryland. So, you know, he just knew I was a huge wrestling fan. This was at the, you know, height of the 90s era. And I really need to start this off with some backstory.
Let's go.
So I went to college on a wrestling scholarship. I went to Morgan State University, D1 college program. While I was there, due to Title IX, they had to cancel the wrestling program.
Oh, no.
Right. So they gave us an option. They said they can release us from our our contract. I forgot what it was called.
Our commitment.
They can release us from our commitment, and the kids could transfer without losing a year, or we could stay at the school. And since Morgan State was the only school that even offered me a scholarship, I decided to stay. And all we have to do was keep a 2.0 grade point average, and we kept our scholarship. Only thing is, it would never go up, never go down. So now that the tone is set, I stayed at Morgan, but I still wanted to be part of the wrestling program. So I went to a local high school down the street.
Okay.
And while I was there, I ended up becoming the head coach at this is a Northern High School, Baltimore, Maryland. I was assistant coach, but I ran everything because the head coach was not fully versed. He was just somebody who just took on the job.
Right.
So one of the kids' parents there recognized me from wrestling at Morgan. And he got chummy with me, and we just started talking. Come to find out, we're huge, you know, Attitude Era wrestling fans and going back and forth. And then he told me that, hey, he was a pro wrestler. Kind of intrigued me. And he said if I gave his son a little bit extra one-on-one training, you know, he could train me. And I'm throwing up air quotes with that. He could train me.
Gotcha.
So 97, 98, I did that with him. You know, I helped his son wrestling and stuff. I never got to see what happened of his son because in 99, something else happened at Morgan. I got married and I transitioned over to cheerleading.
Hey man, you kept your scholarship though, didn't you?
Yeah, and I got another scholarship for cheerleading too.
So, well, by the way, just to throw it out there, the current NWA World Junior Heavyweight Champion Kerry Morton is currently going to college on a cheerleading scholarship. So I don't think anybody will mock you for that at all.
Oh, let me put it this way. I am not ashamed to say that I transitioned over to cheerleading. It was great. It was a fun experience. My wife watched me like a hawk when I went to practice. on top of it, we won a national championship.
Nice.
A small school division, and then we placed eighth in NCAAs. I was on ESPN my senior year in college.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry. I kind of got off track.
No. That's what we're here for, man. We want to know what makes you tick and how'd you get from point A to point B. Obviously, you grew up in Ohio, correct?
Yes.
So growing up in Ohio on a college scholarship that brings you to the Northeast, then you know, you go from amateur wrestling to cheerleading at the university. That's pretty cool, man. Like, you kept your scholarship, you were competitive, and in the meantime, you were coaching high school wrestling, getting married, and getting some professional wrestling training, man. That's the story so far.
Yeah, I mean, and that's kind of how it went. I mean, it was really weird, but you know, just to fall back on the wrestling thing, I didn't go through any traditional training and such. I went to a couple indie shows, watched Jeremy wrestle, but I never fully vested into it at that time because, you know, the next year I transferred over. I went over to the cheerleading.
Right.
So let's fast forward a year and a half. I graduated from Morgan in 99. And the day after graduation, me and the wife hauled ass back to Florida. I was tired of the weather up there. So I was bouncing around in Florida. Now, again, I know no one in the wrestling business. I barely knew anything about wrestling etiquette. You know, just the basic on bumps and some transition wrestling. So I was bouncing from job to job because I was looking for a job. I had a degree in graphic design and advertising. So I came down to Florida and I'm trying to get a job, but I didn't have the correct training. So it was almost impossible for me to get a job. So I was driving up and down the streets, you know, just looking for, you know, now hiring signs.
Right.
Whatever. I passed this one school, Cypress Creek High School. Actually, my kids go there now. Well, my oldest just graduated. My youngest, he goes there now. I passed the school. I was like, oh, I wonder if they have a wrestling program. So I stopped in and I talked to them. They were telling me about, you know, getting involved with the wrestling team. I'd have to go through some certifications and stuff. Long story short, my mother told me, hey, the schools around here need substitutes. I was like, great. So I applied for it. I got hired. And then I talked to the guys at Cypress Creek again, and they said, okay, you've already got your foot in this door. I'll sign you up. And then I ended up working at Cypress Creek for 3 years as a teacher / wrestling coach.
Wow.
So this is where it starts to transition into wrestling. I know it's a long setup.
That's all good.
I was literally struggling. My wife, I married her straight out of high school, so she had no college background, no college education at the time. So we were making ends meet, but I needed an additional income. So one of the kids' fathers, who I was coaching, he worked at this place called Pirates Dinner and Adventure. It's a stunt dinner theater show themed about pirates.
We have one of those here in California too, and it's
I flew out to help it.
Okay. Oh, you did?
Yes.
Amazing. Yeah, we were just there last year. We went around October of last year, Halloween time.
Yep. I trained most of the cast that opened up the show. It was
wow. Incredible. Small world. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So I went down to, you know, apply. He said that they were hiring because they just got a new director. So I went down to the show and I introduced myself to the director. And he didn't know anything about the business. He was just taking it over because they was just throwing a lot of money at him. The guy was amazing, though. So he said, look, fill out this application and then I'm going to take you onto the stage. We went to the stage. He said, if you could, you know, do a backflip. I did a backflip on stage. He said, can you jump on trampoline? I said, I've never jumped on trampoline, but I did diving when I was in high school. He said, well, it's kind of similar to that. So I did a couple things on the trampoline. It's like, okay, great. If you come watch the show tonight, you like it, you're hired. I was like, okay, easiest pie.
Yeah.
So I'm watching the show that night, and one of the guys in the show, he's just taking the fight scenes to a whole nother level. I mean, he's taking bumps. He's selling. He's doing all. I'm like, I like that guy.
Was he doing good facials though?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So, I told the director, I was like, yep, I want to do it. He hired me. Long story short, I ended up working there for like 14 years, wow, off and on. But the guy that I was looking at, he ended up being my trainer.
Okay.
His name is Les Allier. Les, he actually worked on the indie scene here in Florida as Bones the Cutthroat.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So if you don't know, if for those who don't know much about my beginnings before NWA, I tag team with Les, and we were a pirate-themed tag team called the Cutthroats. Skull, I was Cutthroat Skull. He was Bones the Cutthroat. Skull and Bones, yada, yada, yada.
I love it, man. That's amazing. Because like that's like that was your life right then. You were a working pirate at night. So like, why not be a pirate in the Indies? That's amazing.
Yep. And we were a comedic tag team. So we would always get to shows early and such to work in the ring. Cause I, you know, after talking with Les, you know, I told him I was rough around the edges. I hadn't been involved in the actual wrestling business. I just had some little training, and he worked with me on that. And I've been trying for the last couple of years to scrub Jeremy McCullough from, you know, as my trainer off the internet. I want to replace it as Les Allier as my trainer. And I cleared that with Les. Les said that would be fine. So Les is my actual trainer. So we would get to shows early and he would train me and such. And I would be there 4 hours early, train, be the last two to leave. And I did that repeatedly for like a year and a half with Les, riding his coattails.
I'm assuming that means that you did a lot of setting up the ring as well. You know, you can't train if there's no ring set up while you get there.
Yep. I trained every opportunity I got. You know, only thing I had really going for me was athletic ability and, you know, just learning how to take some bumps.
So you literally were learning the art of pro wrestling, like from the deep end. Like you literally were out there in front of a live audience. I mean, sure, you said you got some mat time before and after shows, but you still were on a show in order to get that time. So like you were kind of learning on the fly, right?
Yep, I was learning. I learned it all on the fly. That's thanks to Les.
Now you had your first match in 2001, right?
2000, I think it was 2000.
2000. That cage match is not entirely reliable. It's got a lot of good information, but it's not always accurate. So your career started in 2000, and in again, this was under the tutelage of Les, right?
Yes.
So you go from being this comedic act as comedic act, cutthroat skull, but then there's a transition. And you start coming out to the ring as Jarrell Clark. Obviously, the pirate gimmick, it kind of goes away. What did it mean for you to be out there as Jarrell Clark and you know, kind of represent your own personality instead of being like more of a gimmick?
Well, there's another story to that.
Oh, let's go.
Okay. So, Les and I are still friends to this day. However, Les can be very abrasive. Very abrasive. If you don't get his kind of, you know, attitude, his kind of comedy and such.
Sure.
So we started trying to work for IPW in 2001, 2002.
Ron Nemi, right? Ron Nemi.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we would go down there before shows and try to get on. They had like little pre-show workouts to see if they could, you know, snatch some early talent. And Joe Price was down there as well. That's when they were working together. So one day we came down there. We were working out really early. This is 2001. Came down there. We were working out really early. And this is where the 630 was first unveiled. Les, he said, "Hey, do that 1 3/4 off the top rope. I dare you." Here I am, 26 years old, young, dumb, young and dumb. And I was like, okay. So they pulled out a crash mat, and I did the, it's a 1 3/4 on a trampoline.
Yeah.
So I did a 1 3/4 onto the trampoline, onto the mat.
Yeah. Boom.
Ron was like, "Do that again." Okay. So I climbed back up there and I did it again. And he said, "What if we put somebody underneath? Could you still do it?" I was like, "Oh, well, let's try it."
Sure.
So this guy, he lives in New York now. His name was Wade Rudolph. That's his name. He's like, "Okay, I'll lay down there." So I jumped and I did it on Wade. And Ron said, "Okay, if you can do that during the show, I got a spot for you tonight." And then Les was like, "All right." And he was like, no, it's just for him.
Oh, shit.
I immediately looked at Les and I was like, "Dude, if you don't want me to do it, I won't do it." Because we were there as a package. And right. He's like, "No, get your shine. You do you." So I had some singles gear, and they asked me, what did I want to come out to? And I was like, well, I've been, you know, if I was going to do some single stuff, you know, I originally did a little baller, but that's not going to kind of float here. We could use my middle name. So it was like, okay, we'll do that. So that night, Rod Steele was working this guy named Justice. And Rod got disqualified, but he came out and he was beating the crap out of Justice after the bell. So I came out, I made the save, and I slammed him, climbed up to the top rope, and I did the 630. Boom, perfect, nailed it. Stood up, landed, and just turned around and watched, and the crowd was just dead silent. Absolutely silent. I helped Justice off, his music hit, we go to the back, and everybody just like, what the hell just happened? The crowd was still quiet at this point. So Ryan comes up to me and says, look, you're on next show, we'll figure something out. I was like, okay, I'm happy as a lark. Did not care. The next show, a month later, on the flyer, it just says Jarrell Clark, Jarrell Clark, Jarrell Clark. When they introduced me, they introduced me as Mr. 630, Jarrell Clark. And I turn around like, that's me? What? Okay. And then I run out and throw my hands up, and the crowd goes mild. but they remember the 630.
Sure. Who wouldn't?
I was just like, okay, let's just roll with it. And, you know, I had no pure instinct of going out there as Jarrell Clark. I just wanted to be out there and just get in front of a crowd and entertain. That's just me. I like to entertain. I like to be stupid. I like to, you know, show my personality. Good thing I had some personality, because those early singles matches to me were rough.
Well, I mean, look, you just said it a few minutes ago. You're training on the fly. I mean, that could be expected. But before we go further, like, let's talk about Ron Nemi, because it sounds like he had a pretty pivotal, you know, point in your career by, you know, basically adopting that Mr. 630 name for you and giving you that opportunity. What was it like working for Ron Nemi in those days when him and Joe Price were putting those shows on?
It was great. Ron always treated me well. He always treated me well. He, you know, just wanted me to go out there and actually learn and get better. So he put me with people like Naftali, Justice, Livewire, any local talent who came, or any, you know, up and coming indie talent that came through, that were, you know, cruiserweights. He would put me up against them, and it was great. I thoroughly enjoyed everything that Ron and Joe Price offered me. You know, every opportunity they gave me, you know, allowed me to grow. And you know, if it wasn't for Ron, I wouldn't have got my shot at TNA either, or ROH. So it was crazy.
So let's get back a little bit to young Jarrell and, mm-hmm. and growing up in Ohio. Obviously, you said that you were a fan of the Attitude Era of the WWF, WWE, and you got to see, you know, like me, I mean, we're pretty similar aged. I'm guessing you grew up watching Stone Cold and The Rock, and before that Triple H, or during that time, Triple H, Shawn Michaels, before that Razor and Diesel and 1-2-3 Kid. Did you watch more than just the WWE at the time, or were you watching WCW, or did you watch grow up watching NWA?
Oh, WCCW, NWA.
Yeah, okay.
I'm all the way back to the late 70s, early 80s. Yeah, I'm showing my age. And from the Von Erichs running roughshod to, you know, Jim Cornette smashing everybody with the Rock and Roll Express. So, yeah.
So, go ahead. When you got to Florida and you're wrestling now on a somewhat regular basis for the NWA Florida, you know, which that name still holds a lot of meaning for wrestling fans, you know, mm-hmm. going back to yesteryear, but also that time frame when you were wrestling. I mean, Steve Madison, he's a guy that always pops into my head, Lex Lovett. Mm-hmm. Of course, Steve Corino coming down to defend the 10 pounds of gold. You were in that hotbed of wrestling. Were those three letters wasted on you, or did you appreciate what that was when you first stepped into the ring?
I appreciated it immediately. When I was working for IPW, they weren't doing cross-branded shows, IPW/NWA at the time.
Right.
I was always begging Joe, because it was another opportunity, but I was always begging Joe to get on NWA shows any way I could. And, you know, Joe knew I was green, so he kind of kept me from it for a while.
Yeah.
And until he thought I was kind of ready to, you know, be a part of, you know, a match, if it made sense. But I really wanted to be in NWA shows, because I just remember watching, you know, the old school days with Sting and, you know, Ole and Arn Anderson. Just,
it's good stuff.
Yes, yeah, great stuff.
So then I guess this begs a question, because, like I said, we're close in age, and you know, back then, even at the height of, like, your reign as World Junior Heavyweight Champion, and we'll get to that more into that in a minute, but, like, it wasn't like you could just go online and download wrestling matches. Back then, it was very exclusive, either tape trading, or you could read about what was happening on, like, different, you know, like the AOL Grandstand, if I can date both of us, or the Prodigy home screens. Mm-hmm. Like, you could get online to read about the wrestling, but actually watching pro wrestling back then, from, you know, from the independents, it was all tape training. Did you get involved with any of that while you were coming up in the sport?
No.
No?
I didn't go that deep.
Okay.
To be honest, it was still as passionate as I was about, you know, watching wrestling and such. There was a point where I was not, you know, I wouldn't sit back and, you know, try to watch every old tape that I could.
Right, right.
At that point, I mean, I did it when I was younger, when I was like in my, you know, 10 to 15 years old. I was trying to get every piece of material I could. But actually being a part of the business now, you know, I was more in awe of actually physically doing it than going back and studying it. But trust me, if I could reverse that, you know, I would go back and study more so I could put on a better product myself as I was.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, hindsight's 2020, right? We could all do things a little bit differently if we had that opportunity to. But, you know, one of the things that I remember is hearing your name a lot, even before you won that title. And I think it was kind of based on the fact that you're doing such a unique maneuver, like you explained. That's what got you the spot on the IPW shows. Did that open up any more doors for you in Florida? Like, were you starting to get other opportunities to apply your trade?
Yeah, it definitely opened up a lot more opportunities. At the time, Ron had IPW had a small TV showing, and it started to get around all the way up to ROH, where Gabe Sapolsky, he even saw one of the matches, and he reached out to Ron to see if I was interested. So it opened up a lot of doors for me.
So keeping in line with that, you know, a couple of the names you had mentioned already, somebody like Natale, you seem to kind of almost be married to him for, I guess that's not the appropriate word, but you guys spent a lot of time battling for that lightweight IPW championship, the NWA Florida Junior Heavyweight title. What did Natale mean for you as a wrestler and having those matches with him? Did it help you grow? Was the storyline fun for you? Did you guys, like you said, you're still in contact with him today?
I'm not still in contact with him. I mean, I do have his number. I could possibly reach out if he hasn't changed it. But at the time, you know, it was kind of a small circle of folks who we all wrestled each other all over the state. Me, Naftali, Justice, every now and then Roderick, Cedric Strong. You know, we were all kind of like stuck together, you know, in multiple indies. And it was great to be with those guys because they were all so knowledgeable. They were all so great. We were all kind of new outside of Naftali, who had pretty much been in it since birth. but they welcomed me, they assisted me, they helped me. You know, it was great. I loved every second of it.
Going back to kind of talking about the NWA, obviously it was a far cry from its glory days in the late 90s. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as wrestling for NWA promotions, did that carry any kind of weight in the circles that you were in? Like, hey, you know, I'm wrestling here, but I also wrestle for NWA Florida, or I've had matches at, you know, NWA Virginia, or I'm wrestling matches for, you know, NWA wherever. Did that carry any weight for you, or was it just in your circle, was it just another wrestling company?
Amongst wrestlers, depending on the NWA territory you're talking about, it carried weight. You know, at the time in Florida, we had Joe Price's NWA, and then there was another NWA in Central Florida. I forgot the name of it.
Championship Wrestling from Florida.
I believe so. But if you ask people which one they wanted to be on, everybody wants to be on Joe Price's. So, I mean, yeah, the specific territory carried a lot of weight. And, you know, those names still meant a lot to the people of my age or older at the time. The younger guys really just wanted to be on, you know, all the up and coming shows, indies, you know, New Japan, Jersey All Pro, ROH, you know, sure, any hotshot thing that was going, CZW, they wanted to be on that stuff. And, you know, they would skip out on the NWA shows because that's old. But you know, those guys are far and those are the younger guys, and they're far and few between. But you know, NWA Florida, IPW, we were kind of like a family. And you know, we all stuck together and had good times discussing everything.
Now, obviously, we lost Joe Price, unexpectedly and a lot earlier than I thought anyone would have expected. But that Florida territory was something fierce. I remember, you know, again, we didn't have a YouTube to just go on the internet and watch these matches. So we would read about the results. And I'm here in Southern California, knowing about a guy who at that point was still mostly wrestling in Florida based on what people were writing about you and that territory at the time. Tell me a little bit about working for Joe Price and how that territory I mean, you kind of already talked about the territory, but talk about working for Joe Price.
I mean, working for Joe Price was the same as working for Ron Neamey. It was a great opportunity. They both took care of me. They both gave me matches that would help me learn. They, you know, both taught me psychology, because when I first started, I just wanted to do 630 every match just to get, you know, just to get on top. And they was like, no, here's how you should do it, here's when you should do it. And then they made me make it make sense. Excuse me. And Joe was a big part of that. I know I said it earlier, Joe held me back from being on the NWA shows until he thought I was ready. But once he felt I was ready, he let me go. And you know, thanks to him, that gave me my second TNA shot. So, and that when TNA was still part of the NWA. So thanks to Joe, I'm, you know, he took me to the stars and beyond.
What was that night like, and how soon did you know that that you would become the next junior heavyweight champion? Who broke the news to you?
Are we breaking kayfabe here? So at the NWA 54th or 55th anniversary show,
yeah,
that's where it kind of all started. So it was held in West Virginia. Joe asked me if I wanted to be a part of the show. He wanted me to be a part of a cruiserweight spectacular. It was me versus Roderick Strong versus Danny Doring in a three-way match. And so we drove all the way up to West Virginia. And this was night one or night two. This was night one. So we drove all the way up to West Virginia. And in this match, again, Roderick Strong and Danny Doring, I'm like my eyes are just wide because I'm in there with Danny Dory.
Right.
And this is going to be fun. And it, that match was an absolute blast. I broke kayfabe so much in that match. I think all three of us did. Getting chopped and laughing through it. But it was hilarious. We had so much fun. But at the same time, we all shined. I got to do every signature move I possibly ever came up with to that point. And when I came out of that match, Jeremy Borash was the first person to greet me on my way to the back. And I don't remember what he said, but all I do remember him is coming up and asking me, what are you doing Wednesday night? This is when they were still doing the Wednesday night pay-per-view. Yeah. I said, whatever you need me to do. He said, good, we're going to call you.
Wow.
That next Wednesday, I was on the TNA pay-per-view. But when I left Jeremy, I went to the back and I'm like, God, my head's pounding. I'm so excited. Next thing I know, I have a couple of the promoters and territory owners coming up and talking to me, you know, just trying to get a little bit more information from me.
Yeah.
The next NWA Florida show, or maybe two shows after that, that was in September.
Yeah.
The next, maybe two shows later, October or November, Joe asked me, you know, how would I feel if I got an NWA title shot, a junior title shot? I'm like, do you think I'm ready?
He's like, yeah,
you know, of course you're ready. You showed everyone that you're ready. And, you know, Joe pumped me up. As you can see, I'm skirting around some stuff. Joe pumped me up and he said, your title shot, I'm air quoting you, your title shot's going to be in January. So if you want to get more people here, you know, tell them, come on, it's going to be a big night. So all I could think of for about 2-3 months was, I'm going to get my title shot.
And this is already coming off of you winning the X Division, NWA Florida X Division title, which was, kind of a mirror of the Impact TNA X Division title. You beat, in a four-way, you beat Roddy Strong to win that belt. I think that's pretty impressive. And you were already, at that point, you were starting to get dates outside of just this local area in Florida. You were starting to work the Wildside TV tapings, which a lot of people don't know, but back then, Wildside was a big, big deal. It had ties to previously getting talent into WCW in its early days, but in its later days, it was still one of the first wrestling programs that was syndicated all over the United States in that time frame. Plus, they even had an online show. So a guy like your buddy Jake out here could literally log on to American One on the internet and watch some of the matches from Wildside back in 2002, 2003, 2004. So you were actually getting your name out there even before you won the championship.
Yeah. It was great. That's all I can keep saying is it was great. Again, thinking back to all I wanted to do originally was just have one match to, you know, now look at me. I'm sitting up here getting booked all over the country, you know, yeah. different countries.
Did you get to travel abroad through wrestling? Because I got to be honest, what I know of your wrestling is what I used to read back in the day. Plus, I've been looking at Cage Match. I never knew that you actually got to travel outside of the country. Did you get to travel abroad for pro wrestling?
I've been to Canada, Mexico, Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic.
Nice.
So it took me a couple places, and I thoroughly, I wouldn't trade it in for nothing in the world.
Did you get to know Chris Draven before you guys wrestled, or was it just the night of in the ring and that was it?
I actually met him. I don't think he was a champ at the time of the anniversary show.
Yeah.
But I had met him there. I will say this. I don't know if you have gone and watched that match on YouTube with me and Chris Draven. It was not one of my finer moments, because, and I, you know, Chris, if you ever hear this, I apologize. I was young and stupid. Chris, he jumped. He was supposed to give me an elbow drop and I was supposed to roll out of the way. However, he jumped from the wrong corner. And when I tried to roll, he straddled me.
Oh.
And broke his leg.
Oh.
Yep. And my dumb butt thinking, this is the finish, go to the next move. I grabbed him, dragged him over to the corner by his broken leg, like a dumbass, hit a stiff 630 and picked up the W. So
rough night for the Dravens that night.
Yeah, very rough night. Chris, I apologize. I know I haven't spoken to you in forever. Apologies all around. Sorry.
Thanks for joining the stream. This has been a presentation of Alliance-Wrestling.com. We genuinely appreciate your support. Would you consider subscribing so you'll never miss a future episode? I'd also like to remind you, we do a live stream every Tuesday at 5 p.m. for NWA Power. You can find us on social media at The Alliance Blog. And until next time, we are The Alliance.